and welcome to another episode of Half Court Press. He's Wilson Moore. I'm John Walker. It is Thursday, February 12th. Wilson, we have had an interesting week, man.
We have.
And we say that often because it's been an interesting season for two very different reasons. But this was not the exception because Nebraska lost its third in four games, albeit against some title contenders. And Creighton lost to DePaul for the first time since we were freshmen in high school.
Weird.
So that's happened since our last episode, and a little bit more as well. But those are the highlights. We're going to talk about them over the next half hour or so. But before we do, Wilson, how the heck are you, man?
Doing pretty well. Just, you know, enjoying this part of the season. We're getting down into the nitty gritty here. And, you know, trying to appreciate, like, Nebraska's got seven regular season games left before, you know, who knows what happens after that. But, you know, just trying to enjoy all of them and just appreciate college basketball season while it's still going on. We're like a month away from a bracket.
Isn't that insane? March 15th, I believe, is Selection Sunday. I should have that night free, thankfully, because that night is the Oscars as well. And I don't think I'll have to do much on Selection Sunday this year.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Largely, Wilson, because Creighton has been tumultuous this season, right? Like, it's been up and down and up and down, and certainly up to this point, a lot more downs than ups. And the Jays are very much seemingly headed toward missing the NCAA tournament for the first time since COVID. Like, they've made it and won a game in the made it to and won a game in the NCAA tournament each of the last five seasons. They went to two Sweet 16s and an Elite Eight in that stretch. And this season has paled in comparison to what the last handful have been for one reason or another, right? But certainly, absolutely, like, if the road loss at Marquette was not the nail in the coffin, if a blowout loss to UConn was not the nail in the coffin, if a road loss at Georgetown was not the nail in the coffin, then Wednesday's 72-71 loss to DePaul certainly, absolutely was. Creighton's now 13-12, 7-7 in the Big East, fifth in the conference. And I think we talked about it on last week's episode. Here's how different this season has gone compared to preseason expectations. The Jays were ranked 22nd in the AP preseason poll. A lot of the metrics had them in the late 30s. And so at the time we said, wow, people have little reason to believe, not little, I guess, because of the track record, but for these parts on this team, people had little reason to believe that Creighton was a top 25 team. All of the predictive metrics told you otherwise. But because of the brand Creighton had built for itself and the reputation it had given itself over the past decade, and especially over the past handful of years, the Jays had enough respect to get ranked in the preseason poll. This team openly talked about making a Final Four. Ty Davis mentioned it in June. Owen Freeman talked to me about it in October. So for months, this team openly talked about a Final Four. And here we are. They are one game above 500. They don't really have any impressive wins on the season. And they have a boatload of bad losses. And DePaul is vastly improved, Wilson. DePaul is vastly improved in the second year of Chris Holtmann's rebuild. I'm not denying that. I'm impressed with where Chris Holtmann has gotten that program in his season plus in Chicago. Creighton had won 23 straight in the series, and it should have been 24. It should have been 24. One, because they should just be good enough to beat DePaul. And again, that's no disrespect to DePaul. Creighton should be good enough to beat DePaul. But it's really not about that Creighton didn't beat DePaul, it's that Creighton lost to DePaul. And that's like costly, costly, costly. And we talked about that all season with like this team, especially when you're evaluating tournament resumes, which kind of doesn't matter for this group because they have to go win the Big East tournament if they want to dance. But like when we were talking about resumes, it's like who you beat sometimes doesn't even matter as much as who you lose to, right? And you can't lose to DePaul. Not if you want to build momentum down the stretch and become the best version of yourself by the conference tournament. And just not for the sake of this program, because Creighton should have beat DePaul. Like that's what it came down to. Why didn't they, Wilson? Because of the problems that have plagued this team all season long. The Jays gave up 46 paint points. They gave up 10 offensive rebounds that led to 20 second chance points. So DePaul was like not missing a lot because it got to the rim and got easy looks. And the few times that DePaul did miss, it grabbed the offensive rebound and capitalized on it. And I'm sure everybody listening knows by now that Creighton was up 71-68 with 2.5 minutes to play and didn't score the rest of the game. And the ball bounces this way and the ball bounces that way. And I don't know, did Leighton Blocker step out of bounds before the timeout was called? I don't think so. But all of the minutiae is here nor there. The fact of the matter is Creighton got beat on a go-ahead layup with 7 seconds left because it couldn't keep DePaul out of the paint from attacking the rim. And because of it, the Jays are handed what I'd call a really embarrassing loss, a loss. Because yes, DePaul is better, but Creighton has now dropped 4 of 5. And you could very, very, very much make the argument that it should be 5 in a row if Nick Graves had not hit a buzzer beater to beat Seton Hall on Saturday. Like, even if that had happened, does if he had missed that shot against Seton Hall, does the ball bounce a different way against DePaul? Maybe. Who knows, right? Like that's just kind of the basketball gods for you. But all of the momentum that Creighton seemingly had by ending an emotional week, snapping a three-game skid with Nick Graves' buzzer beater over Seton Hall, was completely, entirely wiped away with Wednesday's loss to DePaul. Might I remind you, the first in 24 games, the first loss to DePaul since January 2015. Like, what was everyone doing in January 2015? Just take a second and think about that, you know? I feel like I've lived a lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, we were freshmen in high school in January 2015.
And so, like, so much has happened since January 2015. It's been 11 years. And Creighton hadn't just like survived that in that series. Creighton had like handedly taken it to DePaul.
Including games in which DePaul's players were actively trying to lose.
Including games in which DePaul players were actively wagering, trying to lose, you know? So, like, yes, like, but this is not that DePaul. And Creighton knew that going in, and it didn't matter because the Jays were handed an embarrassing loss in my eyes, an official bubble bursting loss. If, again, if Marquette wasn't that, if Georgetown wasn't that, DePaul certainly was. Handed a bubble bursting loss. And here they are. Like where do you go from here, Wilson? Like there's 6 games left in the regular season. You know that you're at right now over the next 6 games, you're not really playing for anything. You're playing at most to be one of the top five teams in the Big East tournament and get a first round bye. And then, like, somehow, some way, this team would have to beat one of, if not both, St. John's and UConn. Matchup nightmares for this team. And so, yeah, it's just like, how do you keep things from splintering? How do you keep things from fracturing? That's kind of been Greg McDermott's message, is how this group has stayed together. But this group hadn't lost four or five up until this point. And this group hadn't lost to DePaul up until this point. And this team's NCAA tournament resume hadn't gone up in flames up to this point. So I don't know where you go from here. I really don't. Because it doesn't get any easier, Wilson. And we'll dive into these matchups in a little bit. But the schedule over the next three, Villanova on Saturday. Oh, and then just next week, you have a couple of road trips to UConn and St. John's. Like, who knows what happens over the next three games, right? But if you look at KenPom right now, Creighton is expected to lose all three of those games. And if they did, then that would be what? They'd lose 7 of 8. With the only win in that being, the buzzer beater over Seton Hall. Obviously, one of the losses would be the buzzer or the go-ahead last second layup against DePaul. So, like, flip those if you want, or whoever, right? For the sake of saying, oh, well, they almost lost one. They could have won one too. But this is not this, like, this is the past couple of weeks have not been what Creighton needed them to be by any stretch of the imagination. And it's hard to imagine a world where the next couple of weeks are that way, because Villanova, UConn, and St. John's are not going to feel sorry for Creighton. If anything, they're going to smell blood in the water and try and strike again.
I think
So,
to answer your question of, where does it go from here? What do you do now? And I know Creighton fans don't want to hear this on February 12th, but I think right now it's, barring again a run through the Big East tournament and a
right.
miracle NCAA tournament berth, it's, what can you salvage from from this season? Who on this team? I know there are a lot of veterans, a lot of guys who will be moving on regardless next year just because of eligibility. But like, who fits into the long-term plans? And that frankly, that starts at who's going to be the coach in 1 year, 2 years, because we know Greg McDermott is in the home stretch of his coaching career. He's
Yeah.
going to retire at some point in the next couple of years. When will that be? When does Alan Huss take over? That's kind of the macro thing. And then also just, who sticks around who next year. And obviously that's a collaborative decision. That's the coaching staff deciding this guy fits into the
Yeah.
larger picture, and that's the player saying I still want to be here. And of the guys eligible to come back, Owen Freeman, Ty Davis, guys like that, Hudson Greer, who am I missing? Everyone that's not a senior.
So, like, the crazy thing is that, like, the only two players on this team who will run out of eligibility are Josh Dix and Nick Graves. So here's where it gets really tricky, Wilson, in, like, this is perfect scenario, perfect world scenario stuff, right? Like, Creighton is going to lose players to the transfer portal, whether that's because they left on their own or because Creighton does not want them back. Period. Period. We all know that. As things stand right now, Creighton has two 2026 recruits signed, Jaden Coon and Catrell Harmon. And they're only losing, in theory, only two roster spots will become available, right? Because of Josh Dix and because of Nick Graves. So it's like something's got to change. Like, because we talk about freedom of movement with players in the portal, but there's no way, there's absolutely no way, regardless of who the coach is, that either Greg McDermott or Alan Huss or them both could look at this roster and say, Yeah, we're a player. If we had this player,
Yeah.
it could work. No way. There's absolutely no way.
But you know, I will say, I think the kind of sleeper in all of this, and again, assuming he comes back, is Jackson McAndrew. I don't know if there's, and look, you're obviously a lot more plugged in than I am, and but when you think of like why this Creighton season went off the rails the way it did, I think there are two main factors, and that's Owen Freeman just, clearly not being right all season, for injuries and everything that went into that.
Yeah.
And Jackson McAndrew getting injured early on in what was supposed to be his like breakout season. You run that back, when you think of what does this look like with a fully healthy and with a fully healthy and locked in Owen Freeman and Jackson McAndrew taking that next step. Is this a team a tournament team at that point? Maybe. Are they significantly better than the version of Creighton we've seen the past few months? No question.
Yeah. And that's the, it's like a low bar, right? And again, this is not like Creighton is like bottom of the barrel, right? Like they're not what DePaul has been. No disrespect, no disrespect, but they're not what DePaul was for the past decade, right? Like they're not just showing up and losing games by 15, 20 points a night. Maybe against a UConn and a St. John's they are, sure. But like they are competitive for the Big East standard this year, right? So, yeah, it's just like in my mind, there's no way you run back the roster as is. And obviously, we'd be fools to think that everyone's going to stay. Like regular portal attrition is going to hit. So they'll have some things to open up. But like you kind of went through this a season ago following a Nebraska team that knew it wasn't going to make the tournament. Knew it wasn't or didn't even make the conference tournament, was one of the only, what, three Big Ten teams that will
But
ever
again,
be able to say they.
the weird thing about that Nebraska team is like on like February 25th-ish, they looked like a tournament team. They had five games left, and the general
Yeah.
consensus was like two or three wins would solidify them in the tournament. They lost all five of them.
Yeah, so that is the difference. Here we are on February 12th and Creighton's kind of already done. But ju I just mean in a manner of like, you knew when you got late into the season, and I guess it was kind of different in the Crown, especially, which I don't know. It seems like Creighton's headed there.
The crown is weird.
Yeah. So it's just like, especially in the Crown, but certainly with where Creighton is now and things not getting any easier. Yeah. Like in my eyes, this is a month-long audition for people to be here next season. That's how I see it. Like, this is an opportunity for a guy like Hudson Greer to show that he could be a building block moving forward. And I think he can. This is an opportunity for guys like Fedor Zugic and Blake Harper to show that they have a place. Can be a part of next year's team, right? Like, so it's just, it's odd. It's a really, really interesting situation. But to wrap all of that together, Wilson, a bad season thus far culminated Wednesday night in a last second loss at DePaul. Again, a loss I find embarrassing for a program that had so much success in the series and should have and was in a position to win that game. And it's not going to get any easier the rest of the way with an absolute gauntlet awaiting the Jays over the next couple of weeks. Okay, let's talk about a team that's won some darn ball games. Maybe not so much recently, but there's a reason for that, Wilson. Nebraska got off to the 20-0 start. We talked about last week, this team had what lost two straight to Illinois and to Michigan. And then they get back on track with a win at Rutgers. Like a, they did not play
It
well
was,
Saturday at all. And they
you know
still
what,
won by double digits.
they won by 12, and that didn't even like 12 points kind of underscored how in control
Yes.
Nebraska was. They
Yes.
were up by double digits the entire second half. It never felt like Rutgers had a chance. And
No.
to Nebraska's credit, like that's a game they had to win, and they did. And that is fun. And something like that, as much as you say, oh, Rutgers is terrible, they're at the bottom of the Big Ten, they're 2-10 in conference play, that's not a gimme, as evidenced last night when Iowa lost to Maryland. Like it is. You know, there's a thing Fred Hoiberg and probably a lot of other coaches say, like, you never apologize for winning, and you really never apologize for winning on the road, regardless
No,
of who
no.
your opponent is. So Nebraska deserves credit for just taking care of business against the team it was supposed to beat and just not leaving any doubt. Of course.
Yeah. And then like their schedule is set up really interesting here. And I'll give my thoughts on that in a second. But the important part, the important thing to talk about anyways, is that the win at Rutgers kind of gets pushed under the rug. Because it was a good bounce back at the time, but then momentum was kind of snatched right from under the Huskers again earlier this week in Lincoln.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot to get through from that Purdue game.
Yes,
I'll
there
start
is.
with just that is one of the craziest basketball games I have ever covered, watched. Like, look, I have seen teams come back from down 20 points. I have never seen a team trail by 14 with 2:45 left in regulation and send the game into overtime. That was unbelievable. Purdue took
Yeah.
five free throws in the last minute and missed four of them. Nebraska hit like two or three just like absolutely gotta have it shots where like, you know, Rink Mass comes out on a little pick and pop and it's an open look, but like if he misses, the game's over. You know, if he
Yeah.
misses, then Purdue gets a rebound up like five with 20 seconds to go or something like that. Like just all the things that needed to happen did. And that is after Nebraska played just 22 or so minutes of just flat, lifeless basketball. Fred Hoiberg, I thought, had one of the money quotes after the game was the message to the team was, we lost that game in the first 3 minutes. Purdue jumped out to a 14-1 start, and you know, if, say, Rutgers does that, you got time to work your way back in.
Sure.
Purdue is too good to I mean, I say that, and then Nebraska could have won that game, but you know, just generally speaking, like you give a team like Purdue that kind of cushion, it's going to be a real uphill battle. And Nebraska still almost won is the crazy thing. College basketball games are 40 minutes long. Nebraska took its first lead 44 minutes into the game. On a little Price Sanford layup, and then just when things couldn't get any weirder, you have Jamarcus Lawrence slip on some, I guess, moisture near the sideline.
Flipgate.
Slipgate, yeah. That was pretty anticlimactic. Like you're like in the building, just the way the air just went out of the building when he slipped, like that was, but it was also an appropriately just strange game for strange way for a strange game to end. But ultimately where Nebraska lost was not being able to keep Purdue off the glass. Nebraska has occasionally struggled with bigger, burlier teams like that on the offensive glass, but not like that. Not giving up 21 offensive rebounds.
No.
Oscar Clough had 10 or 11 of those offensive rebounds. Like in a game that featured like the consensus best player in the Big Ten, Braden Smith, and probably like four other guys you could make a case for like all conference with Trey Kaufman-Wren, Rink Mast, Price Sanford, Sam Hoiberg. In that game, Oscar Clough was the best player on the floor. He
Yeah.
dominated on the glass. Like Nebraska just had no, they didn't have anyone with the size just move him out of there. Like Rink Mast said after the game, like he gets planted in there and he is so big and so sturdy, you cannot get him out. And he was the difference maker in that game. He just swallowed up offensive rebounds. I think Purdue took 17 more shots than Nebraska did. And again, just you give a team that good, that kind of cushion, it's going to be a real, real uphill battle to win.
Could you imagine if Creighton had a guy like Oscar Clough? What if Creighton could have had Oscar Clough?
Yeah.
What if
That
Creighton was close to
is
having
that's
Oscar
quite the
Clough?
all that is quite the what if.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And so it's here nor there. But yes, like Oscar Clough controlled that game in every, like he controlled the paint. Like a I think I used the control the paint in a story earlier this year, and I said like a Sherwin Williams security guard. Like that's what Oscar Clough did. And I don't know. Like I didn't get to watch the first half of that game because I was writing a Creighton advance. But I watched the second half. And at so many different points, it felt like Purdue was like, are you gonna come back? Like
Yeah.
You want to come back?
Yeah.
And
I
to Nebraska's
said, like,
credit, they did.
yeah. I mean, there was a point in there where I was like, Purdue is just like leaving the door open and Nebraska
Yes.
is refusing to walk through it. And then
Yes.
eventually Nebraska
Yes.
did. Because that's the weird thing about this team. They've got so many shooters and they can just heat up in a moment's notice.
Do you like, I don't know. I don't know if you like, we're not going to overreact to losing to three teams that are what, top 15 in the country, right? Like top all Michigan, Illinois, Purdue, all top 10 in KenPom. So like you don't overreact to losing games like that, right? But like,
Especially, I think, when you were competitive in all of them. Like, if they had just gotten wiped off the map, I think that's one thing. But, like, that Purdue game ultimately came down to a coin flip. And,
Correct.
sometimes you win that game, sometimes you lose that game.
Hey, I saw that Wednesday night in the Windy
Yeah.
City, man. I saw that Saturday at the Chai. My big picture here is like, those are the wins, like those are the games that you have to win to solidify yourself as a two seed. Like, I think the one seed conversation's out the window at this point because of the three losses, obviously. But like, there aren't any of those. I guess what I'm saying is it would have been really, really, really nice to have one of those. Probably the Purdue one would have been the best one to get, right? Because shorthanded at Michigan, Illinois rolling. Well,
They
was.
were
And
at
they
the
just,
time.
yeah, they
And
were.
that's why the top of the Big Ten is so weird, right? Like,
And oh, so my whole point is like, for Nebraska to help itself out in March, which is insane to say, right? Like, for Nebraska to help itself out in March, like getting one of those three would have been so beneficial. And there just isn't a Michigan, an Illinois, a Purdue left on the schedule. Like, Iowa is metric. Like, Iowa is a metric darling. They're 23rd in
Which is
KenPom. Like,
weird to me that
right. Like, yeah,
they
but
haven't
like
beaten
they're
anyone
not.
good. That, but like
No. And like,
I look at like if you figure the five best teams and like in like maybe the top tier of the Big Ten are Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska, Illinois, Purdue, right? That's fair, right? Wisconsin has beaten two of them, but again, the Big Ten is weird. I think you look at like how have you done against those five teams? Nebraska's 2-3, right? Wins over Illinois and Michigan State, losses to Illinois, Michigan, and Purdue. Iowa hasn't beaten a single one of those teams.
no, they haven't. So I'm like, it would have been nice to really have, it would have been really nice to have one of those. But like, what is Nebraska doing now? Like that you haven't seized one of those like huge seismic opportunities. What do you do? Like, do you what does this team have to do over the final seven games of the regular season?
It has to rack up wins, and that means taking care of business Saturday against Northwestern. That means beating Penn State and Maryland at home. Like those are all games that if you're Nebraska, you just gotta have because Yet resume wins are good, and Nebraska picked up some of those, the road win against Illinois and beating Michigan State earlier. But like, you know what else talks to the committee is just gaudy records. Like you're in the if you're in the Big Ten and you go 15-5, 16-4, that talks. That means
Yeah.
something. But to do that, obviously, again, you need just throughout the season some nice resume wins, and Nebraska has done that with Illinois and Michigan State. And like you said, if you're Nebraska, you would love to have gotten one more of those, but
Right.
that's splitting hairs at this point. But you also just gotta take care of business against the Marylands, the Penn States, the Northwesterns of the world. And that's what Nebraska has to do over the next couple weeks. This was without question the toughest stretch of schedule they're gonna see all season with, in four games, you get Michigan, Illinois, and Purdue. Now they're coming up on a pretty light stretch of schedule. I mean, they got Northwestern at home, then Iowa at Carver Hawkeye. That can always get a little bit hairy, especially if it's good as Iowa has been, generally speaking, this year. And I know I just called them overrated like 2 minutes ago, but
Well, I mean, the
relative.
fact of the matter is they have a really good coach, shout out, and they have an NBA lottery pick in Bennett Sturts. So
And facing
good
them on the
basketball
road,
team.
facing them on the road, that's always going to be tough. But then after that, it's Penn State and Maryland at home. Those are games Nebraska absolutely has to have, and you got to win those, make that record just as shiny as possible before Selection Sunday.
Yeah, in
And who
like
knows, maybe the Big Ten tournament will offer another chance at one of those marquee wins.
sure. Yeah, I mean, with the way the Big Ten set up, like if you get to the quarterfinals, if you get to the semifinal, like yeah, if you get to the semifinals, but like especially with how the top of the league is this year, like you mentioned, the top what six teams, right?
Yeah,
Like
top five. But
your top
and
five
yeah,
teams, like.
Wisconsin, I think. UCLA is also overrated, but just purely record there.
So it's like if you get to the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament, you are playing a good team. And it's like there's a good chance you're seeing a Michigan and Illinois or Purdue. I don't know how the bracket would work out because
It's all kind of clogged
conference,
right now. We'll have a better sense once it gets a little closer.
that and conference tournament brackets don't make sense nowadays anyways. But like I think you're right in saying that regardless of what happens over the next few weeks, which should be a successful stretch for Nebraska to close the regular season. Like this team has not played its last like top 10 team yet, top 10 opponent yet, I don't think. And so who knows? Who knows, man? What do you think Nebraska would be right now? Three seed?
Yeah, I think three right now.
Three. And
And
that's a
that's also where if you're Nebraska, you really want to improve things because you want to get that geographic advantage. Because look, if they play in Oklahoma City, that building is going to be 80% Husker red. Like we kind of saw it in
Yeah.
Memphis 2 years ago. Now move it like 4 hours closer to Nebraska. That's if they I can't think of many teams in the country that would benefit more from getting a favorable geographic, from being within driving distance of its own city than Nebraska.
Yeah, they would flood that place. Like it would the scene in I wasn't even there just from seeing photos of it. Like the scene in
And
Memphis
what
was
like the
insane 2 years
arena,
ago.
Beale Street the night before, it was a sight to see.
Big Red Beale Street.
That's one of like the things I'll always wonder is that like what if they had beaten Texas A&M, what would the scene on Beale Street have been that night? It would have been chaotic, to say the least.
What could the scene in Oklahoma City look like? What could the scene in St. Louis look like? Will we get to find out?
Stay
We'll
tuned.
certainly see. Real quick, Wilson, what is the key in a vacuum? What is the key to Nebraska beating Northwestern on Saturday?
Containing Nick Martinelli and not letting anyone else beat Nebraska. Understanding he's going to get He's going to get his, make things as tough as possible on him, and just prevent anyone else from going crazy. Nebraska did a good job of that last month in Evanston, and they're going to get another crack at it this time.
Yeah, I would think so too. Like he kind of carried Nick Martinelli, like had 22 points, carried them in the first meeting. Trey Singleton had 14, but like Northwestern, as it has in most games this season, did not play well in that. I like has any you never say never, right? Or like you never know what to expect in the Big Ten, but like Nebraska or I'm sorry, Northwestern has not shown anything recently that would like give you a reason to believe that something crazy is going to happen on Saturday. But it's college basketball, it's the Big Ten, so who knows? I Creighton plays Villanova rematch on Saturday. That's the part that I love about the Big East, man. It's like, you know, Nebraska only gets to see Purdue once in the regular season and only gets to see Michigan State once. And in the Big East, they just run the whole gamut. Like you're playing everyone twice, man. And so it's like, I don't know. It's fun in some regard. Anyways, Villanova is coming to the CHI Health Center on Saturday, and they're looking to get their lick back. Like they are looking to exact revenge from Creighton leaving Philly with a 76-72 win in early January. And Kevin Willard mentioned so much that night that Villanova's defense was not up to the task. And if you remember, that's when Creighton was coming off the Seton Hall game, and they were like days from the St. John's loss. But at that point, like Creighton had started to find itself offensively. Because right after that week, boom, they scored 86, 88, 94. Like they'd found themselves offensively. And we saw that a lot in the Villanova meeting. An underrated part of that is like, yes, Austin Swartz had 20, so he was on fire at the time. And yes, Josh Dix had 17 and clamped Bryce Lindsey. But Blake Harper came off the bench that night and dropped 17. Because Villanova just didn't have a matchup for him. He was like too big for some guys and too quick for others. And he was a matchup nightmare for Villanova. Well, the interesting thing for me, Wilson, is he's in the starting lineup now. Blake Harper started the past few games. So like how does that change things? Does Villanova have a better plan for him? I don't know. But Villanova has an inside presence in Duke Brennan. And he's versatile. And so I think the last thing that Creighton wants to see is a stretch five. Because Jason Green, God bless his heart, 6'8" forward, playing with one shoulder, undersized, out of position. And so I think the last thing that Creighton wants is for him to have to go out to the perimeter with Duke Brennan and leave a porous defense even more vulnerable around the rim. So we'll see. We'll certainly see. But Creighton's gonna have to hike up its shorts a little bit and get down the stance and defend a team that's gonna want some revenge and more so keep its NCAA tournament hopes afloat. Like nobody's gonna make the tournament. Now they're just playing for seeding, right? And a loss to Creighton. This version of Creighton would probably drop Nova a seed line if I had to guess. So, all right, man, you got any Valentine's Day plan? Any plans for Valentine's Day other than basketball? You have
So yeah,
honeydews?
Nebraska plays that day. I'm actually going to the UNO hockey game that night just for
Okay.
one of it.
Sure.
Yeah,
Sure.
those are my Valentine's Day plans. Super romantic, obviously.
UNO hockey,
Yeah,
you know?
what's better?
Yeah, I mean, like people fall in love over hockey, like heated rivalry, you know? So who knows? But I do know one thing, Wilson. I'm not doing much. Yeah, I'm just kind of chilling. I'll make up for it later because I will be with the Jays all day, right? What I do know is that in Pinnacle Bank Arena at the CHI Health Center, there will be no love between Nebraska and Northwestern, and there will be no love between Creighton and Villanova. You got anything else for him, man?
I don't think so.
Me neither. That'll do it for this week's episode of Half Court Press. Thanks for hanging with us. Should be another interesting week of hoops. If you want to read all of Wilson's stuff, please go to omaha.com. If you want to read all of mine, I'd probably throw out a warning ahead of time, given what version of Creighton shows up, right? But like, I promise to write a good story either way. So please go read mine on omaha.com. And if you'd like to read, because that's your love
Reading is
language,
fun. Yeah.
then please go to omaha.com. That's going to do it for this week. We will talk to y'all next time. See ya.